You made me cry when you said goodbye. Is that a shame?
We got news late this morning that the great Fats Domino died today. He was 89 years old. That was one of his biggest hits. Ain't That a Shame? He, if you look at his obituary, Fats Domino had more than three dozen top 40 hits in the 50s and early 60s. Blueberry Hill, Ain't That a Shame? I'm walking New Orleans. And so we just pay a quick tribute to him. And you know, Greg Bluestein, it's interesting that that lyric starts with, you said you cry when you say goodbye, which could very well be the anthem for Jeff Flake today.
Yeah, what a moment for him yesterday.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. That's Greg Bluestein, of course, the political reporter at the AJC. What are you writing for tomorrow?
I've got, we're writing about how Democrats are contesting all sorts of different races that they used to never contest, like seats in Athens, seats in Forsyth County. That might not be moving tomorrow, but I'm writing that tomorrow.
Okay. It's got to start somewhere. You've got to get the farm team in order to move them up to the majors. By the way, last night we were at a mayoral debate. I moderated it. You came, and I got to meet your mother for the first time.
Your biggest fan.
She was just great. I was really glad I got a chance to say hello to her. Theron Johnson, Democratic political consultant, is with us. You know, Theron has deep credentials in the consulting business. Among other things, he oversaw the Southern campaign of Barack Obama when he ran for re-election in 2012. He's worked with Kasim Reed and just about every other Democrat of note in this state. Hey, Theron, welcome.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Brian Robinson, your buddy. You guys are basically on tour a lot of the time doing political
and he didn't want to go on tour with me too much. I guess we got a little dispute going on here.
Oh, you do? Is that right, Brian?
Let's settle it today.
Well, he's been hard to schedule. He wants to renegotiate his contract. So,
the problem is that I'm in state and Theron's on the road with the Falcons, watching them lose everywhere around the country. My wife is like showing me Facebook posts, Instagram posts that they're on the field at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts Sunday. Oh. She's like, you know, why can't we be like Theron? Well, isn't that what everybody wants?
Did she show you the picture of me kneeling on the field? Did she show you that one?
Brian Robinson, a Republican political consultant. He was a communications director for Governor Deal in Governor Deal's first term and now is out beating the bushes, looking for business as a government relations guy and a political consultant. We're not talking about the governor's race today, but you're now working with the Cagle campaign. Theron, I should have pointed out you've launched your own business, Paramount Consulting, and I think the least we could do is mention it on the air.
Well, thank you, Bill. I appreciate that. It's going very well. We're a bipartisan firm. That see Brian laughs when I said that.
There's no such thing.
But no, it's going well, and so thank you for that, Bill. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay, let's start with a breaking story. This crossed the wires, mid-morning or so. Greg, the Georgia Court of Appeals. There's been a lawsuit pending in the Georgia courts on behalf of DACA students who say that they, by state law, should be allowed to pay in-state tuition at state universities. A lower court said, yes, that's right, that they should get in-state tuition. But the Georgia Court of Appeals today said no, that the litigants in this, quote, have failed to carry the burden of showing that the DACA policy had the force and effect of federal law. And that even if the DACA policy had the force of federal law, it created a clear legal duty that required the Board of Regents to grant them in-state tuition. And the Board of Regents, though, has broad authority to interpret rules the way it wants to. I think what's interesting about that is for the court to say that DACA does not have the force of law.
Yeah, that was the interesting part to me, and the part saying that the regents essentially have broad discretion; they can do what they want with their policies. This is destined to go to the Georgia Supreme Court, at least be appealed up. And Charles Cook, who's a frequent guest on the show, is handling the case for the DACA students, and said essentially this is not over, and I don't think it is. But if that stands, that gives the Board of Regents tremendous power over setting these types of rules.
Yeah, We're going to talk a little bit later, Brian. We're going to have more about immigration and the state of Georgia. We're going to talk a bit about a panel that the governor, your former boss, created back when you were in the first term working for the governor, and you all passed some statutes that related to immigrants in this state and created an immigration enforcement panel. We're not going to go into that right now, but I'm looking forward to hearing you talk about it. The AJC did a piece the other day basically saying that immigration panel hasn't been doing a whole lot in the couple of years since it's been put together. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Because this is one of those shows where we really, I think, have to start with news out of Washington. Yesterday, a remarkable day in Washington, in part because even with the president, as he came to the Hill to talk about the tax bill that he is working with Republicans to pass, he was fighting with Bob Corker, Senator Corker of Tennessee, once again on Twitter. And and Corker came to this luncheon with the president. But shortly after the president left Capitol Hill, Jeff Flake, Senator from Arizona, Republican senator, took to the floor and made a speech that had everybody talking. Let's listen to a little bit of it.
I am aware that there is a segment of my party that believes that anything short of complete and unquestioning loyalty to a president who belongs to my party is unacceptable and suspect. If I have been critical, it is not because I relish criticizing the behavior of the president of the United States. If I have been critical, it is because I believe it is my obligation to do so, and as a matter and duty of conscience. The notion that one should stay silent and as the norms and values that keep America strong are undermined, and as the alliances and agreements that ensure the stability of the entire world are routinely threatened by the level of thought that goes into 140 characters. The notion that we should say or do nothing in the face of such mercurial behavior is ahistoric and, I believe, profoundly misguided.
Brian, Jeff Flake has never supported Donald Trump. He's been a critic of Trump from the campaign all the way through his first months in the White House. And now he has said, I'm out of here. I'm not running for reelection. I can't win unless I'm willing to adopt the Trump policies and align myself with him, and I just don't want to do that. How serious a blow is that to the Republicans in Washington?
I think the question is, how serious of a blow is it to Trump's agenda? Because you now have Bob Corker and Jeff Flake, two conservative members of the Senate. I don't care whether you support Trump, you can be against Trump and still be a conservative. In fact, I think many conservatives do have their qualms with some of the president's agenda items and thoughts. But you add those two to John McCain, who stick it in the president's eye every chance he gets because of comments the president made about McCain in 2015. And then you got these moderates from Maine and Alaska and a few others who, for political reasons of their own, veer off from the party line from time to time. So all of a sudden, you don't have a governing majority as you're trying to get really tough legislation through that requires party unity. We're not going to have that. We will not have that for the next 14 months under any circumstances. So it's going to be really hard. It is not. I agree with a lot of what the president wants to do on policy, but a lot of his actions have been unstrategic, or they have been a bad strategy, because he has slowly but surely chipped away at a governing majority to people who just want to stick it in his eye. And I think he's brought some of that on himself, and that's unfortunate.
Theron, you know what's interesting about what Brian just said, though, is that Jeff Flake has voted fairly consistently with President Trump. And even late last night, the Senate took up a bill. They took up a measure to overturn previous rules that allowed the public of individuals to sue banks and credit companies like Equifax. And they overturned that last night and protected the banks and credit companies. This was a Trump measure, and Flake voted with Trump. So this has a lot more to do, I think, with style and the behavior of the president, do you think?
Absolutely. And I think if you really listen to what Senator Flake said, was that it was almost this notion like all of my people, whether it's donors, staunch conservative Republicans, the Republican establishment, is saying, hey, it's been 9 months. Let's continue to stick with this president. But I think that he shares the sentiment of not only a lot of other senators, but the American people, that this president's behavior, particularly with Twitter, I mean, I've never seen, Bill, a sitting president attack own members of his party the way that this president has done. And I agree with Brian that it does affect his ability to get something done in Washington, but we still don't know what the president's agenda is because he can't work with Democrats because he is just consistently alienated them and pushed forward to try to discriminate on everyone that most Democrats support. But now he doesn't have the support in the Senate, particularly with the Senate leadership. I mean, let's not leave out McConnell. I mean, he has been on a war path against Senator McConnell since he was sworn in D.C. So I think what Senator Flake basically said is what a lot of people in the halls of Congress feel, is that this president's behavior, this unhinged behavior, is just unacceptable and it's unpresidential.
And by the way, that's why McConnell is saying nonstop right now, focus on tax reform, focus on tax reform, because it might be the only thing holding the fractious Republican Party together at this moment. And that's going to be the real test for Trump. I mean, Republicans, Robert Novak once quipped that God put the Republican Party on earth to cut taxes. This is the test of that right now, though. If Republicans can't get together to pass a tax reform when they control all branches of the government, what does that mean?
Yes, but here we have the president coming to the Hill, meeting with senators. You could have imagined under most circumstances that the story of the day of the news cycle would have been Trump is working with Republicans for a change. They really are putting together a tax plan. And instead, it's the ongoing Twitter war with Corker and then the bombshell announcement and powerful speech on the floor
And
by
coming on
Flake.
The heels of McCain, and not just McCain, but George W. Bush, too, Bush's.
And let me say what I hope to see, and I stand by what I said. I think Flake could be a problem for the governing majority, even though you are correct. He has voted with the Republican majority and with the president on almost all things. This is a principled conservative. I was a staffer in the U.S. House when he was on the House side. He was stripped of his Judiciary Committee spot because he wouldn't vote with leadership. He was an outspoken critic of overspending during the Bush administration. This is someone who speaks my conservative language. I want to see spending cuts to match any tax cuts. I want to see fiscal responsibility, not just tax cuts alone. And that's what Bob Corker is saying, too. I'm not going to be there if this increases the deficit. God bless them, people. And so if their freedom, their newfound freedom from not running, allows them to be the guy at the table who demands spending cuts to match the tax cuts, then this will be a fantastic deal because we've got to cut some of Theron's big spending projects.
So one of the things that I read this morning is that less than, I think only a third of people who were recently polled, the American people, support Trump's tax cut plan, tax reform plan. Another thing that, you know, that was startling to me when Brian talks about cutting spending, yes, I mean, I'm one of the few Democrats that truly believe that we've got to cut spending in Washington. And also, listen, if this president can work with members of Congress to truly reform our tax systems, I support that. But at a time where, you know, it's going to add almost $20 trillion to the national debt, and it still emphasizes on cutting taxes for big corporations and for wealthy Americans, I think therein lies a lot of problems on the Democratic side, which is going to be very hard for him to find that support. So I think what the two U.S. senators are seeing on the Republican side is that this president's inability and his administration. I mean, one of the things that with Bannon's departure and a lot of other people like Rich Priebus and all those other folks, they would have been able to have relationships with these senators to try to get them to some common ground. But right now, it's Trump and Trump only, and he just has been ineffective in trying to get anything done.
So I want to just share with you all briefly, you know, Jeff Flake was on this show. Tom Faust pointed out to me that it was almost exactly 2 months ago to this day. He was on the show on August 23rd talking about his relationship with the Republican Party. He'd written a book about his concerns about where the party was headed. And Tom, remind us of what exactly he said when we talked about a reelection campaign.
Yes, I can win.
There you go.
I can't control what the president does, but I can run my own campaign. And, you know, I have a pretty important day job, but the campaign will come, and we have a good structure set up and a lot of support out there. And Arizona tends to value those who stand on principle. We tend to elect independent-minded senators, and that's what... That's what I'm banking on.
Well, Greg, isn't that interesting? Yeah. He is independent-minded when he goes against the president, and yet he said yesterday that unless he towed the line with the president, the voters of Arizona would not bring him back to office.
Yeah, that illustrates the vice he's in. His approval ratings were 18%, I think, in one of the last public polls that came out in Arizona. On the right side, he was hemmed in by all sorts of pro-Trump Republicans who said he wasn't loyal enough to the party. On the left side, he was hemmed in by a lot of Democrats, even if they admired his stance, would never vote for someone with that conservative track record, especially with their own strong candidate coming forward.
You know, this is one thing I say to people who come to me and want to run for office, but I know them and they're uncomfortable with Trump or the direction the direction of Trump Republicanism. And I was like, there's no place in the party for anti-Trump Republicans. So don't run. That's my advice to you. If you can't go out there and say that you proudly support the president and you want to see him reelected, don't run right now, because that's where the party is. And Jeff Flake has gotten that realization. Bob Corker has come to that realization. I think they have deeper concerns beyond reelection. But I think that it's very telling that this is happening. If you want to win a primary, you've got to express your loyalty to the president's agenda.
So the thing that we said on this show weeks ago, Bill, is that when Trump first started these Twitter attacks and when Trump came out with the Charlottesville issue, when he refused to denounce the blatant racism and white supremacists and nationalists, we said on this show months ago that he was basically trying to drive the argument to the right, and he was basically playing base politics, that he was doing all of this to fire up his base. And so what Brian just confirmed for us is that Republicans in the Senate and in the House now are forced to really go home and answer these tough questions, because our president has basically made everyone retreat to their corners. Now, this may be a smart strategy for them to try to retain or maybe pick up some seats during the midterm election, but it also has the possibility of backfiring at them, because the fact still remains, when members of Congress go home to their districts, they've got to be able to show the American people in their district, what have they done and what have they been able to accomplish with this president. And I think if President Trump is not able to get tax reform through before this midterms elections, while he has forced everyone to retreat to their corners and to play this very divisive game of partisan politics, Democrats have got to capitalize on this opportunity and try to, you know, really communicate to, I believe, which is middle America, which voted for Trump but don't like what he's doing but will be open to supporting some Democrats.
All right, we've got to get a break in. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side of the break. We're going to we'll bring into it the reactions some of our elected officials here in Georgia. Is playing here as a campaign issue certainly in the mayor's race of all places. We'll talk about that. And we're also going to ask the question to our friend Brian Robinson of what he thinks when he hears the leaders, the Paul Ryans and Mitch McConnells, refuse to take a stand on behalf of their members, like a Jeff Flake and a Bob Corker. But you're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
From Morning Edition and On Second Thought to Fresh Air and All Things Considered, listener support makes everything you hear on GPB possible. If we didn't hear from you during our recent fall fund drive, your contribution now can still make a difference. Please take just a couple of minutes to support the programs you rely on and enjoy on GPB at whatever level is right for you. Go to gpb.org and click donate, and thanks so much for your support of Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. We have Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson, and our good friend Greg Bluestein, who joins us for our Wednesday shows from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Sally Yates has, you know, she's starting to get back out in the spotlight, as we all know. And she got into the act by tweeting on Tuesday, when all this fighting was going on between Corker and the president. She tweeted, "We can't let POTUS's complete indifference to truth become ours. Constant barrage may be exhausting, but normalizing it is too dangerous." So she's really stepping up her public profile more and more in the months since she was let go by Trump as acting attorney general. Greg, it's interesting that a number of Georgians have reacted to this, and the Georgia Democratic Party used the flake decision not to run again as a way of going after leading mayoral candidate, according to the polls, Mary Norwood.
Yeah, I mean, and they've been attacking her left and right. It's funny because in 2009, they kind of waited till the runoff phase, it's their nose, to attack Mary Norwood, to paint her as a closet Republican. And that helped Mayor Reed win by about 700 votes. This time they've gone after her early and often. They unleashed a online assault, I don't know, a few weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And that's just going to continue through the runoff if she doesn't even make it. And at every turn they're saying, this Mary Norwood is a self-described independent, but they're saying essentially you're giving a wink to Republicans by saying you're an independent, that you'd be the first non-Democratic mayor of Atlanta since 1881.
A tweet from the account of the Georgia Democratic Party, Theron, was this: Jeff Flake is doing what Mary Norwood still refuses to do. And by that, of course, they mean she's been asked repeatedly whether she supports or doesn't support President Trump, and she has refrain from talking too emphatically about that.
Yeah, it's a problem for her campaign, and I'm waiting for Brian to respond and support her here in a few seconds. But the fact of the matter is that Atlanta is still a Democratic city. We are a Democratic city in a red state. And as Bluestein just pointed out, I mean, we haven't had a non-Democratic mayor since 1881, and we've had an African-American mayor in the city of Atlanta for the last 43 years. And so I think that if Mary Norwood wanted this problem to go away, well, there's a few suggestions I'll give her for free. Maybe Brian can give me a little bit of his retainer for this little bit of advice. But number one, why don't he just...
In this race.
I'm not in this race.
All right,
But lately, he's been really anti-Reed and anti-Keisha. Made some comments about her that kind of sound like...
Being anti-Reed these days is saying, gee, the mayor looks like he ought to comb his hair a little better today.
but one of the things that Mary Norwood should do is, you know what, Bill, come on the show or sit down with you, and it's all public record. Let's see how she's voted in all of the last maybe 10 or 12 primaries. That's one way to do it. Or she can really come out in a forum and either say, I support President Trump or I don't support President Trump. But I think the longer this question goes on, it's setting it up for if and when she makes the runoff, for her to be in a position where I think the citizens of Atlanta are going to really want to know, do you or do you not support this president? Lastly, let's not forget, in the debate 8 years ago, it was Richard Belcher who went up to her and asked her a simple question. And that was, did you or did you not vote for President Obama? And she gave a very similar answer that she gave recently when she was asked about whether she would denounce Donald Trump or not. So, you know, I'm a believer that if someone is a Democrat or Republican, if they want to serve, they should be able to. But I think that as we continue to go on, the Democratic Party is not going to stop, and she's going to have to answer that question.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting that the Democrats see this as ammunition in the mayor's race, and I understand why they would.
It's just more examples of the Democrats engaging in identity politics. Mary Norwood has done nothing that is pro-Republican. No, she's not going to go out and stomp on the toes of Republicans because she needs to get their votes. That's her only pathway, is to get Republican votes plus some Democrat votes, which, by the way, has been the coalition she has put together to win her at-large council seat. So, of course, she's not going to go in and make enemies. But this is identity politics. Oh, you're white, therefore you are Republican. You're white, therefore you are unacceptable. She marches in the Pride Parade. She's taken no stances that would offend the liberal base in any way. It's outrageous. It's all identity politics, which is why Republicans are going to be okay even under Trump, because the Democrats can't help themselves.
All right. I really appreciate both of you for commenting, weighing in on that. I want to steer this away from the mayor's race because, there's three quarters of the state right now isn't paying attention. And I want to go back to an issue that I mentioned before the break. Brian, let's listen for a minute. Yesterday, both Mitch McConnell and Speaker Ryan were asked repeatedly by reporters in the Capitol how they responded. Did they have a response to the way that President Trump was bashing in stronger language than ever Bob Corker? This was even before Jeff Flake took to the floor to announce he was retiring. Let's listen to the way Paul Ryan responded to that barrage of questions on his side of the building.
All this stuff you see on a daily basis on Twitter this and Twitter that, forget about it. Let's focus on helping people, improving people's lives, and doing the things that we said we would do that accomplishes that. That's what we're focused on.
Okay, agenda above all else. To some extent, that makes sense. But at what point, Brian, do members who are represented by their leaders at what point are they going to say to themselves, gee, if I get myself in a bind with the president, am I going to have the support of Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell? Or are they going to say, no, the issues matter more, you're out there on your own?
I think Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have come out and said this Bannon approach that we're going to take out members that aren't loyal enough is a recipe for becoming a minority party again.
Okay, but maybe I didn't ask it correctly. Paul Ryan yesterday, just like Mitch McConnell yesterday, had an opportunity to say it's abhorrent that the President of the United States would attack members of Congress the way he is, assuming they think that. And from everything we know behind the scenes is that there are a great many members up there who don't speak out but feel that way. Don't they at a certain point have an obligation to speak out on behalf of their members?
You know, I think that whereas much of the what Trump does doesn't have a strategy behind it, a lot of it is just to drive the news cycle, what McConnell and Paul Ryan have said is strategic. I think that they are frustrated with some of these eruptions and the attacks on their caucus. They see it as counterproductive, but they don't fight back because they think fighting back and engaging in that mudslinging intra-party is just going to hurt our efforts to get anything done. And at the end of the day, this isn't about the party as it is about the country when you are the governing majority of the Congress. They have a duty first and foremost not to chastise the president but to pass budgets and to fix our health care system and to defend our nation's borders and protect us militarily. That is their responsibility. And what Paul Ryan is saying is that shut out the noise. Let's focus on those things. That's why we're here.
Greg, I don't think it's overinterpreting the what we're watching up there to say that Republicans are scared to death. They have not passed anything meaningful yet. This tax bill, if it falters in any way, could be disastrous for 2018. And so They're saying loud and clear, oh my gosh, the personal fights, we got to put them aside. We got to get some legislation passed here, right?
It's a moment of decision for the Republican Party. And you have members saying exactly what you just said. We can't imagine ending the year without a signature accomplishment after infrastructure has gone nowhere, healthcare has gone nowhere, immigration has gone nowhere, all these big ticket item after big ticket item has gone nowhere. And so Republicans are now delving deeply into that policy. Just today, there was a back and forth over the 401k future. I know Trump said in a tweet yesterday that there's going to be no changes to the 401k.
There was a proposal. We haven't seen a tax bill, we want to point out. We're just hearing little dribs and drabs, as we do with the healthcare bill. But we are told that one of the proposals was to cap how much money individuals could put into a 401k, right? And Trump then said, no, we're not going to do that.
And then this morning, a House appropriations leader said, yeah, actually, we are thinking about doing that because that could save – that could help offset the tax cuts on the other end.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of significant debate going on that's getting overshadowed by a lot of the
– Yeah, but even Donald Trump a couple weeks ago, he sort of took a – he sort of took a very cautious approach to this tax reform bill. He said, I hope to get something passed this year. But the thing is, I'm not going to let the Republicans off the hook on this one. The way you get things done in Washington, and Brian and I have worked for members of Congress, is when you have the legislative branch working with the executive branch to move forward an agenda that ultimately is going to benefit the American people. May not be exactly what both sides of the aisles want, but it's able, they're able to compromise. The reason they haven't been able to get anything done is because from the inception of Donald Trump's campaign, he has been running a campaign against the very establishment that he's now trying to work with in order to get things passed. And so I do think that ultimate responsibility falls on the Republican leadership as a whole. But at a time when this president continues that unhinged tone and this divisive manner, which we all agree around the table needs to stop, it doesn't give the ammunition to the people in the legislative branch to go back to their constituency and to work together to ultimately put forth legislation that will help the American people.
So it's always bad to be a betting person on what's going to happen on the Hill, but you've got to imagine that despite, Brian, the different the different kinds of Republicans we have on the Hill, the most conservative, moderates, or anything, they're going to do everything in their power to unite and pass this thing. I mean, I think it's desperate. Theron's shaking his head, but I think getting it done is so important to them that they're going to put up with a lot of things that some of the members won't like at all.
Absolutely, because as Greg said, we are 9 months in and have no major legislative accomplishments. We need deliverables. We need to be able to say, we promised you we would do X, and here's X. And we haven't done that yet. So there's still some time, but as we know, it's really only about 4 or 5 more months. And then all of a sudden, you're back in an election year. Now, I think the House races are going to be much more closely contested than they've been in recent years, because I think Democrats are very energized now. I'm seeing it in Georgia, and they're still losing, as they should, but they're contesting races that they wouldn't have before because their people are energized. Even in knowing they're going to lose, they want to get out there and just say they hate Trump. So they're very motivated. And, of course, the Senate map is going to be really interesting with Bannon taking on Republicans internally. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the oxygen that is in Washington is going to go toward politics after probably April or May of next year.
Well, Chuck Schumer is energized, too. And yesterday he had a little scrum with reporters. And here's what he said about the tax plan.
This plan is a disaster for America. It's no wonder our Republican colleagues want to rush it through in the dark of night, because the more it's exposed to sunlight, the more rotten it smells. And the American people will know that.
Greg, again, all these comments are based on what we think may be in this tax bill that they're still hammering out behind closed doors. But we're told it's got to come out like maybe at the end of this week, early next week, I think.
Yeah, especially if they want to work on their timetable. Yeah. I mean, once you get close to the holidays, it's kind of lost time. You've already seen it literally an army of lobbyists descend on Washington because they're worried about their own special interest tax loopholes being closed and tax breaks being affected. They're worried about NAFTA and the future of the free trade agreement. But there was 130 lobbyists in Washington yesterday alone, additional ones, not above and beyond the lobbyists who are already there, just there to hash out those agreements.
We're Robinson and Johnson, for goodness sake.
I'm not a lobbyist, Bill. I don't know why you always say that. I am.
Yeah. Hey, but one thing I want to say really quickly is what you're seeing is that, and Bill, you tell me, have you ever seen either party, let's just not make this about the Democratic Party, Republican Party, or the Libertarian Party, have members of the president's staff fired or resigned to say, I'm going to go out and basically run against every single person that the current president is supporting. I'm going to run Republicans against Republicans or Democrats. I mean, we've just never seen anything like this before in our lifetime. But the second thing I think is that this is a non-traditional, ineffective way to try to get legislation passed in Washington. Historically, what we've seen is that Democrats and Republicans will put a bill on the floor of the House, let a fair and proper debate transpire, and then you'll go and see what the mood is from different members, different caucuses, and then you go negotiate. But to continue to hold this bill and not You know, I mean, we're basically negotiating or talking about taking sides about a piece of legislation that we haven't even seen.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, and that, I think that's Trump's leadership, and that is what Chuck Schumer was talking about. Is that it smells, it's terrible, it stinks, it's bad for the American people. But until we really see it, we can't really have a open, fair debate about the legislation.
And Theron was invoking Steve Bannon, who is yeah. fighting that fight against establishment Republicans. And Steve Bannon came down to Atlanta earlier this week and met with Bernie Marcus, the second biggest mega donor for Republicans. And you know what he told Steve Bannon, according to Politico? He's open to funding Steve Bannon's insurgency, but let's just see how tax reform plays out. That's how important tax reform is to Republicans.
Yeah, for those who, I mean, Bernie Marcus's name is familiar to many, many people, a founder of Home Depot, along with Arthur Blank, and a great philanthropist here, also someone who has in recent years given a great deal of money, as you point out, Greg, to Republican. So here's what's happening here at Political Rewind. We're really waiting to see this tax bill when it finally comes out. And as we get it, we will be looking at the impact it could have here in Georgia. And you'll hear that in shows coming up in the weeks ahead here. Let's do this. Let's get our second break out of the way so we can come back and talk. And we got to talk about the fact that Democrats are in the spotlight right now. It appears that the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, and the Clinton campaign, or representatives of each, have been less than honest in describing their relationship to a very controversial, very hot dossier that alleges Trump's involvement with Russia, both personal and political. We'll do that in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of two children abducted by a rebel group in Uganda, forced to commit atrocities, and forced to marry each other. They developed a bond, had a child, escaped, and began a new life. We talk with journalist Alexis Okeowo about her new book about ordinary men and women fighting extremism in Africa. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 here on GPB.
Greg Bluestein, The Washington Post had a big story yesterday. There has been a dossier that has been part of the Mueller investigation, was made part of the Mueller investigation that was compiled during the campaign last year and came to light as President-elect Trump was coming into office, that was compiled by a British former Secret Service agent, intelligence agent, rather, alleging Russian involvement with the Trump campaign and some salacious information
that we can't say on air.
Well, I mean, it's been out there, but yes, personal behavior on Trump's part in Moscow that some think could be used to blackmail him. Now it turns out that Democrats helped pay for this research after Republicans had initially paid for it during the campaign as a way of undermining Trump. Then it was handed off to the Democrats. Now, just real quick, opposition research isn't necessarily not true research, and yet this really has created some waves in Washington, given Republicans something they think they can counter all the Democratic charges against them.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it through the Trump administration's prism, they've always said that this is a partisan attack fueled by angry Democrats who are upset about Hillary Clinton losing. And then to find out that this is funded by Hillary Clinton's, some of the research was funded by Hillary Clinton's campaign, only gives them fuel to the fire. But yeah, opposition research exists. There's entire armies of opposition researchers. So if you're in the political world, you're not all that shocked to hear that.
Brian?
I'm not shocked to hear this research. No, we all do that. What I'm shocked by is the utter and blatant stinking hypocrisy of hiring a foreign agent to do the research. This is someone who's not an American. And these Democrats have been talking to us over and over and over again about the danger, the nefarious influence of foreign agents stealing our elections away from us. And look, there's this little nice Brit guy out there doing the exact same thing as all those Ruskies. And it just goes to show you that there is no credibility to what the Democrats have said. They don't believe any of this stuff.
Theron, you are going to have a hard time matching Brian's hyperbole and rhetoric just a moment ago. That was a great
and
dramatic.
He said Ruski.
That's classic Brian Robinson spin.
but the point is, Theron, this is not good for Democrats. You cannot accuse Trump of being a liar all the time turn around and be caught lying.
Yes, you can. You can basically call this president, which Republicans remember. I mean, Corker even said that the president consistently lies about a lot of things. But no, listen, it was not probably the best method and to do the research. But as you pointed out, Bill, this was a process that began with Republicans and then the Democrats, because like me and other Democrats and Americans truly believe that the Russians did have some involvement, which has been proven in the outcome of this election. And there were meetings, there were plans in place to try to retain information against Hillary Clinton to sway this election towards Donald Trump. But at the end of the day, I think, honestly, the Republicans want this to go away because they really don't want to have a conversation about Russia. I disagree with Brian saying that the American people don't care about it. I do think something is there, and I predict before this president is either impeached out of the White House or he leaves gracefully, there is going to be a lot more information uncovered about Russia's involvement in this past election.
All right, Greg, I thought Maggie Haberman, the great New York Times White House correspondent, when she saw the story in the Washington Post, tweeted something to the effect of, gee, who would have thought Democrats lied too? But in fact, maybe this, I go back to it because Theron didn't want to hit that quite head on, which I get. You cannot constantly call the president a liar and then get caught in a big lie.
Yeah, I mean, it opens you to charges, as you said, of hypocrisy. I think what Democrats would say is he's more frequent in the lie. Yeah. But still, it shows that both sides might have a little mud on their faces.
Yeah, and we're also going to watch, the other thing that's being pushed on the Hill right now, and we're not going to get into it today, we just don't have time, but we will eventually, is the accusations have been floating around for a long time, but Republicans are now trying to make more out of them, of an Obama-Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State, deal to sell uranium production materials to Russia. And, that story's been out there and never gained much traction, but it's apparent that Republicans are now really going to try to push that story forward, and we'll see how far they get with it. Let's move on, if we can. Greg, let me turn to you first on this. We learned this. I think it happened at you had an event Monday night for people who are
subscribers to Politically Georgia and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
That's that thing behind the wall that Trump's building.
We hope it's
only
a little
yours
more accessible.
Is cheaper.
We hope.
So it's your new subscription political blog. And Chris Riley, the governor's chief of staff, was there, and among other things, said that legislators better be careful about things like religious liberty in the upcoming session, or else Amazon could take a hike.
Yeah, and let's just set the context. Chris Riley, as Brian knows, has worked for the governor for more than half his life and almost speaks with somewhat of the same voice as the governor. So this wasn't just an errant aide kind of speaking off the cuff. He knew what he was saying when he said it.
That was always my job internally, was to speak off the cuff.
Exactly.
In error. That was my job.
We missed that. So Chris Riley gets up and says that he's worried about the rhetoric. And he said in no uncertain terms that just the mere floating of a bill, even if it doesn't pass, but the near floating of a religious liberty bill will have repercussions. And he said, if you don't think CEOs are paying attention to just the fact that it's been introduced or even has a committee hearing, then you're lying to yourself.
Yeah, but was it Riley who said, I read this in the paper, I thought, was it Riley who said, don't judge us on what people mm-hmm. talk about going into the session, judge us on what happens in the end of the session, what the outcome is. And I thought that was a fairly shrewd way to frame
this. He said that twice. He said that's kind of their new mantra, is that judge us by what we do, because there's no way that anyone, either Democratic or Republican, can control what gets introduced. There's 236 lawmakers, and many of them have competing visions and ideologies and all that. But he and a lot of Republican leaders, not just in the governor's office, but all over Atlanta, are a little bit concerned about what religious liberty does and what that debate does, because they don't want this blowing up, and they don't want this jeopardizing Amazon.
Governor Deal, I think with Chris's statements, sort of laid the groundwork. I think the most important thing that he can do is in the opening speeches of the General Assembly, but even before that, even in November and December, in public speech opportunities, he needs to say, I will veto anything that I see as discriminatory that will hurt us in economic development. And that way, legislators have cover, the ones who've campaigned on this, they have cover to say, look, we're not going to waste time on something that the governor's going to veto. It gives them, so that way that message will go away. But we've got to hear it from the governor on the front end. And I think they're laying the groundwork for that right now. Great. Good for them. But let's go up a step further here and say, how much does this make an impact? You know, North Carolina still got that law on the books. Are they off the board forever? Texas in recent years, which is like Georgia, a magnet for Fortune 500 companies and headquarters and new jobs and strong economic development, they've had much more divisive debates over the last couple of years over these social issues than Georgia has. It's much nastier stuff. And they've actually had like fist fights and brawls on the floor. So it's not that bad here. We're still the number one state in the nation in which to do business. We're still the place where Amazon should come, no matter what. And I know that what Chris is saying is true, and I think that his leadership, the governor's leadership, is one of the major reasons why Amazon has us high on the list.
Well, let's put this in context. So first of all, I'm happy to hear my friend Brian add a second phase to Riley's point about the business repercussions or the business impact that this will have. But let's really put this in context, Bill. You had every single person who's running for governor and for Republican sign a pledge, not just verbally commit to. They signed a pledge months ago. This is after the governor said we don't need Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Georgia. This is after legislators protested this bill. This is even after the governor vetoed it. And for these members who are running for governor to sign a pledge to say that we are committed to RFRA is something that shows you where we are as a state. Yes, it does have a business impact, but let's talk about what this bill, and we've seen many forms of it, what it specifically does. It blatantly discriminates against citizens in this state. And I think that if Riley and Governor Deal want to go a step further, add that to the comment, Brian. They need to say exactly what you just said. Don't always make it about recruiting these big corporations that, yes, is going to bring a lot of jobs here, and yes, it will be great for our state. But the reason why they really don't want to have the debate here and the CEOs are paying close attention, a lot of these employees, people who are with Amazon now or people who they will hire, does not support religious freedom bill that Georgia is trying to introduce and that every single person running for governor on the Republican side has signed now. So I encourage the governor and others to add discriminatory language to this plea, because unless you do that, we're going to have the same fight we had the last 2 years, where it's going to be a bill that's going to be passed, it's going to be watered down, and it's going to get to the governor's desk, and he's going to have to veto it again.
All right, but there's no question, Greg, it's coming up. Brent Frost, who's a Republican county chair, mm-hmm. and one of the real voices in the party, said, I'd rather stand by my principles on religious freedom than sell those principles.
He said, I'd rather have the First Amendment than have Amazon.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And this is the Republicans doing, Bill. Let's not put this out. These conventions that they have, I never get an invite. I never go. I really want to go. Someone should really invite me because I really want to see what goes on. But they all gather in these rooms in Augusta and in Macon and places all in South Georgia.
Outside of Fulton and DeKalb, where the places y'all go.
And predominantly white men who look like Brian, who are a little older than Brian, and they get in this room and they say, you know what, we want our First Amendment. We want our religious freedom. We don't want LGBTQ people to be around. You know, y'all do say this. That's what y'all say. And then these gubernatorial candidates are forced to sign these pledges, and now the governor's saying, hey, but what happens? Here's the ultimate question I want to leave with our listeners. What happens if we don't get Amazon? Will Chris Riley and will Governor Deal come out the next day and say the same thing they said? That's what I look forward to.
Well, the governor's already vetoed a religious liberty bill once and did it with a very powerful statement. I have to give him credit
for that. And I'm giving him a tremendous amount. And Brian knows this. I have said on many shows, this show and other shows, that he should be commended by that. But where are we in the Republican leadership when Amazon and business opportunities are not on the line? Will you speak up and speak out then? That's my point I'm trying to make.
Thank you. I would add to this, Greg, if the governor's already vetoed this once this time around, as a man who is in his last legislative session and can't run for re-election, I see no reason why he'd suddenly have a revelation and say, now's the time to sign it.
And he won't. But the question that comes up next year is not RFRA on its face, because that might come up in 2019, but not next year. What it comes up is different manifestations of it. We saw last year, this past year with the adoption bill, there was a provision slipped into it that would allow private adoption agencies not to place children with same-sex married couples if that was against their religious beliefs. So it's different sort of offshoots of the religious liberty bill that will probably play a big role in next year's session.
All right. You know, on every single show, we have a list of about three times the number of topics that we can actually get to in our 50-plus minutes. One of those topics today that I said we'd try to get to and just aren't going to have time for is this conversation that we do want to have about the immigration panel that Governor Deal put in place that's supposed to deal with complaints against those who violate Georgia's immigration statutes. So we're not going to be able to get into it today. We will. It turns out the AJC points out that nobody's filing complaints except the man who seemed to be most responsible for convincing the governor's office they needed to really crack down on immigration. So I apologize. We're not going to get to it today. But we will. Brian Robinson, Theron Johnson, I love having you two together. Thank you so much for being here. Greg Bluestein, thank you. Olivia Rheingold and Tom Faust and Tyler Morris, thank you for being over there in the control room and keeping this ship headed in the right direction. Real quickly, cannot tell you how excited I am about Two-Way Street tomorrow. We are doing a show tomorrow with one of the greatest songwriters in popular culture, Jimmy Webb. If you don't know Jimmy Webb by name, you know all of his songs. By the time I get to Phoenix, Wichita Lineman, Galveston, Up, Up, and Away, they go, did I say MacArthur Park? He's a remarkable songwriter and singer. And we had just a great conversation with him when he came into the studio a couple of weeks back, a very down-to-earth guy who's very candid about his life and career. So we're on at 2 o'clock with that show tomorrow, and if you get a chance to listen in, I hope you do. Meanwhile, whether it's Political Rewind or Two-Way Street, a lot of you cannot listen when we're on the air in real time. You can subscribe to both shows' podcasts at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, Political Rewind is, you can see it on Political Insider at AJC.com. Greg Bluestein, you'll be posting that show at some point fairly soon.
In a couple hours.
Yeah. Or you can get it at our website at gpbnews.org. So thanks to all of you for being here tomorrow, 2 o'clock, Two-Way Street. Friday, we'll be back with another edition of Political Rewind at 3. Have a great evening, everybody.